Evidence Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evidence Footprints on BBSRadio.com. So nice to have you here with us on this November the 26th on the West Coast, or November the 27th, now Thanksgiving, on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Of course, we don't want to neglect the folks in the Mountain Time Zone. You know what time it is, so I don't need to tell you. We are celebrating my first year anniversary tonight. We sort of began an early celebration last night with my guest, Ken Adachi. Actually, that was the last show of the first year. Tonight is the first show of year number two here on BBSRadio.com. And I'm very appreciative of the listening audience that's been sending emails, recommending links to articles, recommending guests for future shows, and we're going to be bringing some of those people on board in the month of December. And basically, I'm appreciative of the fact that the listening audience has been growing. I'm told exponentially, virtually night after night, and so I have the listening audience to thank for spreading the word out there about this show. We are about bringing you the truth, as difficult as it may be to swallow on occasion, but we're also offering solutions and asking you to do some research, consider these things. We're not asking anyone to believe anything, yet if you do hear the truth, then do something about it. Action is very important, and we're going to continue these self-empowering discussions. Some call it teaching, and I guess in a sense there is some teaching involved, especially when the Holy Spirit comes along. I would like to reference something that's going on in the world. As of earlier today, we received notice sometime about 3:30 Eastern time, that there was a bombing, several bombings that had taken place in Mumbai in India, and a number of people have been killed, many more injured, and as usual, this is being blamed on Al-Qaeda. Of course, the media couldn't predict these things, but as soon as they happen, they seem to know who's behind it, and we recognize propaganda. The images that are being shown on the television look very staged in many cases. They are showing smoking buildings or shattered windows and dead people lying in the streets. What I want to encourage everyone to do is to pray for these people, number one. Pray for peace, and also not given to the fear that this is intended to create. Fear is an illusion. We've talked about it many times, and we're going to be discussing that tonight, as well as offer some insight with tonight's guest as to how you can move out of the fear and how you can move into reclaim your God-given sovereignty and your freedom. With that, I'd like to introduce tonight's guest. He has been a regular guest on Evident Footprints pretty much since the beginning of the show. And he is also a sponsor. And he's got some wonderful products that have made a lot of people get very happy, because it's brought them around to becoming very healthy again. And he is an environmental scientist, historian, even a musician. He's got a background in chemistry. He at one time worked for one of the Fortune 500 companies, IBM, and And that doesn't mean international ballistic missiles. but it might as well be called that. Anyway, I'd like to invite back again on this anniversary show on Evident Footprints, Mr. Michael Anthony. Michael, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Don. Thank you, sir. Great to be back on. And happy birthday. Congratulations on your first year with your great show.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And you said happy birthday. It is my birthday, too. That's kind of synchronous, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. Funny coincidence that it's your natural birthday as well as your radio show's anniversary, first year anniversary. So double congratulations to you, Don, and happy birthday to you.
Well, here we are on Thanksgiving, and I suppose that we can all be thankful that we're still alive and we still have an opportunity to turn our country around and really turn the world around in light of the many topics that you know we discuss. We don't mince words on this show. We tell it like it is, we lay it on the line, and let the chips fall where they may.
That's right.
And what's interesting is those that are creating all the chaos in the world have a lot of money that they invest in that, and all we're investing is the truth. It's amazing what can happen. A lot of people are waking up. A lot of people are writing me, telling me about your products. They're telling me about your interviews, the information that you bring forth. And, of course, they're very complimentary about the majority of guests that I have on the show. So I'm pleased with what we've all done together. This isn't just about me. In fact, it's not about me at all. It's about the truth, and it's about us becoming conscious the way God created us. And so, well, you know, there are a lot of things along that line that I'd like for us to talk about in the next 2 hours.
It's very nice to hear the compliments, Don, and I enjoy being on your show, so thank you.
Well, you heard me mention what's going on in India, and if you remember about a week or so ago, if you heard the show, that is, I've been basically prophesying that something is going to happen with India. You could see the writing on the wall. This intention to add up to 20,000 troops in Afghanistan after Barack Obama said we shouldn't be there. First of all, he shouldn't be there, so that's a totally different issue.
That's right.
But the rhetoric that's flying, I'm just referring to the rhetoric.
Sure.
He goes to Pakistan. He comes back from Pakistan and Israel and England and wherever else he went, Germany, giving these self-styled JFK-type speeches where he's got people describing him as the next John F. Kennedy. and now he's talking about, even though we're not supposed to be in Iraq and we're not supposed to be going after Iran and we shouldn't be in Afghanistan, talking about sending another 20,000 troops there. And I forewarned, I said, take a look at this, because you've got something happening in Afghanistan. He goes over to Pakistan, and now we have the trouble in India, as predicted. And I don't take any delight in that, but as I mentioned, you know, we have to begin to discern what's going on here and just see that this is their own little game, and we don't have to participate in it.
That's right. And there's no such thing as random chaos. When you see chaos spreading all around, it can only be through high organization and vast financial funding. These aren't some camel jockeys dwelling in caves. These are highly paid professionals backed by Western capitalists that are really the international bankster clan that we've discussed numerous times, the Rockefeller Rothschild clan. So this is organized chaos, definitely not just random chaos.
Now, I find it interesting that this comes on the heels of Benjamin Fulford's most recent article. I don't know if you've read up on him lately, but he's the one that's supposedly in touch with the Chinese secret societies. He's come out and said that the Illuminati offered him $1 billion and the position of finance minister of Japan if he would stop revealing the truth about what's going on. They're very upset that this is coming out. Well, I wonder why. I wonder why. If what they were doing was so righteous, why are they so afraid about us knowing what it is? It's quite obvious that their intention is to enslave society, and so they have to be secret about everything they do.
Sure, rats have to work in the dark, Don, and you turn the light on rats, and they're not very happy.
Yes, well, he spoke about the torch of the Rockefeller family passing from David to Jay Rockefeller. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't, but I've been sensing that for some time, because David, of course, is quite old, and good riddance to him, and hopefully his time is coming quick. But Jay would be the most obvious guy to pass the torch to, since he's a senator, he's established, and so they're going to probably put the mantle on him to carry the weight.
That's really, in a sense, although we don't want to acknowledge fear, just the very concept of somebody actually in a position in the government is playing that role in the Illuminati. But it really doesn't matter when you break it down, because whether they're doing the bidding of somebody outside the organization or the government or inside the government, there's really no difference.
No, not at all. The shadow government is permanent. The guys that get elected and come and go are just the facade, the veneer. The people really calling the shots, they stay seated year after year, and they always seem to get reappointed by the new administration.
Yeah. Now, you know, the thought entered my mind while you were saying that you look at who these people are, and we know quite a bit more about who they are and what they are than most people will allude to. Of course, we've talked about that on this show many, many times. We've talked mm-hmm. about the reptilians and the draconians and the greys. And there are other alien groups that are somewhat malevolent. And so we're talking about the shapeshifters. And I find it interesting that these soulless beings, these beings without any spiritual aspect,
that's right.
Morals and integrity and a conscience.
Conscience, there you go.
Are able, and probably a consciousness in a sense, because to demonstrate that you have a particular ability in a scientific realm doesn't necessarily mean that you're spiritual.
Right.
I find it interesting that the reptilians age and they have to move on. And sort of like a snake shedding its skin. They have only got so many sheddings on their calendar, and their time is up.
Well, yeah, but they know about the recycling, and before I cover that, let me just say for those listening that haven't heard your previous shows, Don, and don't understand what we're referring to, and may infer that I'm cold-hearted because I said good riddance to David Rockefeller and hope his time soon, it's because the Rockefellers, especially David Rockefeller, financed Mao Zedong, slaughtered millions and millions of his own countrymen, financed Adolf Hitler. The Rockefellers financed the Bolsheviks, plus he's a devil worshiper, Luciferian. I have no regard, no respect at all for Nazis, commies, and devil worshippers, and the Rockefellers are all of that. So, good riddance to them. Now, with respect to the point you were just making,
making the point about the shedding of the skin. It's kind of interesting that they have to leave, you know.
Yes, Don, but they know how to come back. Let me explain. Not too long ago, I heard Tex Mars on Alex Jones, and he was disclosing all of his research and these devil worshippers and what they're into with their black magic and how they symbolize it all. And he was describing this circle with snakes eating each other, and he said, that's a symbol of reincarnation, and then he laughed and said, you know, they believe in that. Yes, they believe in it because it's real. And that's why we're seeing an agenda unfold that's at least 200 years in the works. So how can that continue on? Because they know about reincarnation, and they look for their associates to come back at key intervals. Just like in the Himalayas when the Dalai Lama was born, their high lamas would go out and search for him and find him and bring him back to the monastery when he was only 7 years old. Because reincarnation is real, and they know that, and that's how they keep their agenda on track.
I understand that. I'm speaking just in the physical sense of their immediate mortality. Evidently, as shapeshifters, I think it probably causes a lot of wear and tear on them.
The bottom line is everything is mortal that's imperfect, and those reptilians are very imperfect. So they fortunately do not have immortality available to them.
Yeah.
And we can only hope for the time when the portals for rebirth are shut and they are not allowed access back to this world.
I notice that that there's a lot of compliance along certain lines pretty much globally. And there are different ways. You know, they have these concordats that the Vatican signs with certain countries, and if they basically bow down to the Vatican, then they give them money, and of course they have to reciprocate. The Vatican participates in many things. They give them a foothold in those particular countries, and the Vatican's pretty much everywhere around the planet. They play a role, and we hear all these stories of I say stories, but this goes back quite a ways too into history of these caverns underneath, or vaults if you want to call them that, underneath the Vatican itself, where there is soul energy. These people live off of stealing our energy. In real time, they do things to cause us to give it up willingly. Fear is one way. Their focus on the ego, and their focus on the false self and all of its different aspects and manifestations become a major factor in how they propagandize everything. And you know, you don't see the Vatican behind this or in front unless you really do some digging and see where they have a financial interest in the gold, the opulence that they show. Every time you see a Catholic event, it's gaudy, it's 24-karat gold, everything that the camera can put its lens on. And it's somehow legitimizing what they do in the eyes of the followers, let's say of the Pope, even though they know nothing about the Pope's history. They know nothing about the roles these guys played during the wars. And we're speaking about the world wars. They've been around that long, and when they move into the position that they're in, it's really a political position. It has nothing to do with religion. And like the secret societies, they focus on the black arts, like you were describing. They're Satan worshipers. They're devil worshipers. And they actually mock God at the same time. all of this is cloaked in their mysticism and their manipulation of the different languages that they use and the rituals that they perform. When you see the Pope sitting on his throne and the cross is upside down, that should tell you something there.
I would think so. They're definitely just putting on the outward appearance of being an authority on the Lord himself and the Almighty, but of course they're not. And this may surprise some that aren't aware of this, but the Catholic Church in Rome is actually a bank, Banco Vatican. So hence all the material wealth, Don, because they've been hoarding it for centuries. And that's really what they are, a bank unto itself.
Yeah, and that's really something to think about. And they're a bank that gets a lot of money from other banks. you know?
They're stealing it if they have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're an actual bank. And all that wealth that they've accumulated would be able to help a lot of people around the world if they were only generous with it.
Now you have the people that are Catholics, and we're not attacking the Catholic religion.
I was born Catholic.
Yeah, I'm not going to attack the Catholic religion. My mother was born Catholic, and my grandmother was a Catholic her whole life. And I was exposed to the service, the Catholic Mass, and something about it didn't resonate with me. It was my personal issue.
They're very shallow.
And I found that to be the case in many of the different forms of Christianity. In fact, I began to question why there were all these different forms of Christianity.
Right.
Even as a young boy. So as we get older and we look at these things, we either pay attention to them or we just look the other way. And I would say, and you'd probably agree, most people are looking the other way, pretending like none of this is happening.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
For a variety of reasons, which we've talked about, the fear. And I know you have many times in the past brought up the issue of virtuous living.
Yes.
And I'd like to talk about it, if we could. I know there's some things that you want to share, but talk about virtuous living in the sense of the ultimate spirituality. You know, virtuous living is a vibration. It's a frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And our thoughts and our actions definitely play a part. These things that we're describing, when you talk about people that are practicing sacrifices and pedophilia, child sacrifices or female sacrifices or any kind of human or animal sacrifice, to a pagan god or to the devil himself. And some people have a problem with that word. You know, they let's say the forces of darkness or wherever there's absence of light, if you want to use that term too.
Sure.
They have a difficulty in getting a grasp of how deep or how profound this is.
Well, I was just going to say that
frequency that they practice this on is so low, and then everything that they project in terms of advertising and media information, propaganda, the programs, the education, and then the way they present the religion and the way they tell us what's going on. We have this Hegelian dialectic that's constantly at work. Mm-hmm. And so most people can't really get a handle. It's like, where do I start?
Sure, exactly. And that's bottom line is because we just don't have the quality teachers out there that are going to be able to explain what we're about to cover. And that's why so many people just can't get a handle on this. And it's the crux of our survival as freedom-loving individuals. And if we don't live virtuously as individuals, then We are doomed as individuals and as a country as a whole. And they know that. Now, let me just start with how virtuous living equals power. When you study the Lord's life and you read various gospels and translations, you'll come across where the master's walking through a crowd and a woman, knowing that she wasn't worthy to really be healed by him because he's so far above her. And she understood that. She was humble. And so she realized, if I could only just touch his clothing as he passes by, he's so powerful, I'll be healed. So as the master passes by, she reaches out and just touches him. And the master says, "Who touched me?" For he felt virtue leave him. And then another translation will say, "Who touched me?" For he felt power leave him. So now you see, virtue is power. And no one ever manifested power like the Lord himself when he was incarnated. The master was power from head to toe. He was glowing golden yellow. Sparks came off his fingertips in full moon nights. He was stunning to be around and a marvel, and everyone knew that. And of course, his enemies feared him greatly because of this power. And so he taught us the proper way to live as individuals, as followers of himself, as true Christians. And that is simple. Live virtuously. There's seven virtues, and then there's the counter seven vices. So by studying the seven virtues and applying them diligently throughout all our activities, 24/7, 365, because that's what it takes, then eventually we will accumulate a lot of power. Where there's power, there's strength, there's knowledge, and there's independence. Now, our enemies, these Luciferians, they don't want that because they have to control us in order to establish their Luciferian global structure on us. One world government, one world currency that's electronic, and a one world religion, which will be Luciferian. And the only way to pull it off on us is to dupe us and make us not aware of what we are and what we are not. So what we are true divine beings created by an Almighty, brothers to the Lord himself, little angels in the making. That's what we are. Adam and Eve were angels to replace the fallen angels, because the fallen angels had no redemption at all. Their father, the Almighty, was so disgusted with them that he cut them off permanently. And so he created Adam and Eve to fill in that void. And that's why Satan had to tempt them. He was jealous right from the get-go. And after he ruined them, as far as tripping Adam and Eve up, causing what is known as the fall, which is simply imperfection coming into existence, because everything God the Almighty creates is perfect. Only this devil's and mortal nature can cause imperfections. And of course, our world is full of imperfections, and that's what they needed in order to have a place where they can have the upper hand. And so it's through virtuous living, the way our master taught, that we can become dynamos of power, never getting sick. You see, just that alone, never getting sick. That means you're never down. You're always up and running. They don't want that, because how can they control you? How can they stop you? How can they roll over you if you're up and running 24/7, full of energy, feeling great? And so they've contrived a counterfeit system, superimposed it over the Lord's creation, and they've got us trapped in it. And with blinders, like a black magician putting a spell over everyone, people are walking around asleep, unconscious, even though they believe they're awake and fully conscious. They would swear they have their own volition and they're in control of their own destiny. And yet, none of that is true. Because until you truly awaken and have real consciousness and awareness, then until that point, you have no control over your life at all. You're just a leaf in the wind blowing whichever the way the wind blows.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mike, most people would say that virtue has to do with morals, and that's true, but it goes way beyond that, doesn't it? In other words, it's the decisions that you make, the choices that you make, and really recognition. To me, being virtuous has to do with the truth. Virtue is truth, really. Ultimately, it's the highest aspect of virtue. And so to pay attention or to feed the false self, the ego, to be operating on a lower vibration than what one was created to be, certainly is a lack of virtue. So one should be striving to become more conscious of everything, not just how they treat people or not how they think other people are going to perceive them. One is virtuous in and of his or herself. In other words, they're not concerned about what other people think, because to be that way is operating in the mind heart that is created with this mind control and the propaganda and the fear and all the other things that they tempt us with the intention of controlling us. So this is a person really to get in touch with their virtue. Would you agree that they've got to go inside and find that connection with God, with the Creator?
Yes, absolutely. And they have to do their homework. We all must do our homework. That's part of our responsibility for being alive and participating in the Almighty's creation. But specifically, there's seven virtues that we all have to study and master. For example, patience is a virtue. That's an old saying. And so you have patience, you have generosity, and then they have their antithesis, where instead of generosity, you would have greed. And instead of patience, you would have short temper. You know, no resolve at all. And you would have, instead of love, there'd be hate. And instead of being productive, there'd be laziness.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also purity. And in the opposite of purity, well, that would be obviously be where you're living very impure, whether it's how you treat other people or yourself. And so we always have to realize that the battleground is internal. There's nobody to conquer. There's nothing outside of us that we have to conquer. The only conquering that's required is internal. Conquering the lower nature, which came from the fallen angels, and re-establishing our divine nature, which is totally virtuous, the way the Lord taught, because this is how all of the good angels live in the heavenly perfect realms. They're all very virtuous. None of them have any faults at all. They're all literally perfect. So people will say, well, you know, Mike must be perfect, huh? No, I'm not perfect. I'm striving to be perfect. I am more perfect now than I was 10 years ago, last year, 2 months ago. I'm always working on myself. I don't dump on anybody else. I just constantly push myself to be better, to do better. And then I only hope that everyone else can at least try to do the same, so that collectively we can become a great country again.
Yeah, you know, what comes to mind here, Michael, when I look at, I'm listening to all of these qualities that you're describing, and you mentioned greed. greed is a result of an illusion that's been created that there's an insufficiency on the planet. And so, therefore, get as much of whatever it is you desire while you can, and at any cost. That's what we're seeing now. And there's an impatience about that, too. In other words, the patience is, in its spiritual sense, it would be tolerance. Tolerance in regard to time. But if you recognize time as an illusion, then patience really only applies to time, doesn't it?
Time is a concept that it's a scale of measurement, and so it has no other real intrinsic value except just as a scale of measurement for consciousness.
It holds the three-dimensional world together is what it does.
But there's a time frame in the heavenly realms, too. A thousand years is but a day unto the Lord. And so it's just a reference for consciousness. That's all it is. And when we understand what time really is and what it isn't, we will all live a lot longer. Because people think, I only have so much time. I'm 60, I'm 70, I'm 50, I don't have much time left, you see? And
but we're told that, though. That's
right.
The point I want to make, is that
sure.
We're taught that the average person lives so long. Well, I don't consider myself an average person, so... So
yes,
how long am I going to live, you see? That answer is within me.
Yes, but in addition to that, see, we're taught that time is rigid. Like, you know, it's all sands in an hourglass, and that's it. But it's really not at all. It's just a measurement, a scale of measurement of consciousness. The greater the consciousness, then the more time will be allotted, and it's maybe difficult to grasp that at first, but that's how it is. For example, all little creatures with small awareness and conscience, they don't live very long, like insects, for example. And yet, those with a greater awareness live longer. You see, and that's one of the secrets to life itself. The greater the awareness, then the more time afforded to you. The time scale changes is really what happens as the consciousness and awareness expands.
Oh, yeah. Even in this reality, time can be and is used to measure frequency or vibration. And so... The amplitude of a particular vibration, in other words, its volume, its intensity, its perceptibility to the hearing aspect of us, is related to how quickly the frequency rises and falls above a mean, and that's dependent upon the waveform, which gives a shape to it, and so the rising and the falling of that frequency above a mean frequency it can be measured in time. Now, if we're dealing with the lower frequencies, we shorten our lifespan just because we are undulating at a slower rate, and we are made to vibrate at a much higher frequency. Where the virtue comes in.
But also, consider this, Don. The eternal now. If we can grasp the concept of the eternal now, the time frame will change instantly.
Yes.
Because in the eternal now, see, eternal now. There is no time in the eternal now. Everything is really the eternal now. The past is just a reference now for the memory, and the future is just a perception of what may be, but we're always really operating in the eternal now, but our consciousness is too distracted to understand that and utilize that to its full advantage.
We remember the show you and I did on November 6th. That was a Thursday. We talked about and that was 3 weeks ago. We talked about the fact that the identification with the ego is a past event, and in that the ego perceives things as they are known, and that word known is a past tense of the verb to know. So what is known identified with the self is looked at in the past, but it's the false self.
The
I in living in the past cannot be in the now. It cannot be in the eternal now. So they have separated us, or we have allowed them, we have permitted them, whether consciously or subconsciously, to keep our vibration in that lower frequency. It has to be a lower frequency because it's not moving in the now, and it's certainly not moving forward into the future.
Yes, Don, that's right. In order to really comprehend the eternal now, we have to be functioning from our higher divine nature. Exactly. It's our mortal nature that fragments everything. And that's what keeps us from discovering the power that wants to avail itself to us so we can become the fulfillment of what our Creator intended.
Now, there's another truth that comes out of that, and that is that we have allowed them to tell us who we are.
That's right.
And as a result, we have accepted someone else as our captain, the captain of our ship, other than the true captain, because the true captain would not tell you something that's not true.
Right.
Okay? And when you're living virtuously, you're aligned with the creation itself, with which is the highest aspect of everything that exists. There is nothing higher than that. So to expect a savior now, you see, we'll use the term Jesus just because so many people are familiar with that personality, whatever label, whatever name we want to give him. There are many. And it's just for the sake of this discussion, we'll refer to him as Jesus. He came here and did save us. So that's a past event. That's already occurred. So what do we do with what he gave us? What do we do with the teaching that he gave us?
Okay, well, there you go, Don. I mean, there's the big question right there, because the real teachings of the master aren't even really available to the average person. You're not going to get it in church. The Bible is only for those that know. Otherwise, you read it and you won't understand what the real inherent messages are. It takes a teacher to show what the passages in the Bible are really referring to, especially when it comes to the Lord himself in the four Gospels. The four Gospels are just basic reiterations of the same thing, but we know the Master said and taught a whole lot more than what is available to us in the four Gospels. And so, unfortunately, it's been difficult to find the teachers that really are intimate with the Master so that they can provide his true teachings, and the public will benefit from it. And but that we're in a time frame now where that's come about, thank God. And so the Lord himself is the pinnacle of perfection. There's no other person to try to emulate. If you want to be happy, if you want to know what true peace is, inner peace, no matter what's going on around you, no matter what kind of turmoil, always have that inner calm and peace, then the Master himself is the only one to study and emulate. And as you pursue it, he will guide, he will bring you further and further along the path, just like he did with me and you, Don, and everyone else that wants to know. Because we have to start off as little infants in kindergarten, and keep working our way up and graduating from one level to the next until we're worthy enough, ready to handle the meat and potatoes of the master's teachings, which will get us to like a graduate level, and we will then have enough understanding where our lives are benefiting, and then we can show other people. In fact, other people will say, wow, there's something about you. How do you do that? And then you can then show them how it's all done. And that's the way it's supposed to work. But the organized religions fail miserably at providing this most fundamental purpose of their existence.
Mm-hmm. I had Joe Church on my show. Now, I'm not sure if you heard that this past...
I did hear some of it.
Oh, okay. And Joe is a good friend of Rick Adams. And for the listening audience, Rick has been over 30 years a broadcaster of the truth in the Patriot Movement, and he's very knowledgeable about the Bible. And Joe described to me in a private conversation that he read the Bible seven times before he really grasped all the concepts in it. And he sees this stage of humanity's, if you want to use the word evolution, along the spiritual path that we're all headed, or would like to think we are headed in, as the final opportunity to choose between God or Satan. In fact, everything that we are presented here in this reality, as a rule, or as an MO as to how the planet operates, is from the view of Satan. It's from the desires of Satan and the false promises that Satan gave his followers. Whether you want to say all these people are fallen angels, I would say there are a fixed number of fallen angels, and that number doesn't keep increasing. Although there are those that will ally themselves with those fallen angels. Mm-hmm. And so those that are in denial, those that are unconscious and are not even aware that they have a choice, are probably going to go in a direction that they wouldn't wish in their wildest dreams to follow. But through their ignorance and their refusal to wake up, and that's a choice. That's their personal choice. I'm not judging them by saying it. I'm just making the observation. Why would I want to wake someone up and then begin criticizing them for having been asleep?
Right.
You know, it's an oxymoron. And it's exactly what they do to us.
Yes.
You see? While they put us further to sleep through their mind control and their technology and all the manipulation of the foods and the ecosystems and even the food for the mind, you know, the belief system and the propaganda, all of this is intended to mock God, to
not just to mock God, but
well, I was finished.
but to destroy his creation, Don.
To deny it, really, to create an antithesis of
A counterfeit, right.
Yes.
That's what they are. They're counterfeiters. But let me elaborate because I respect Joe and I respect everybody else that has some valuable insight about the history of the planet from biblical perspective. But unfortunately, no one's really got it done. Here's what it comes down to. God is a gardener. He makes gardens. That's what he does. His angels tend to the gardens. Adam and Eve were created and put in the garden. That's how it all starts. The devils come along and they trip everything up. The devils are cut off from their Father, the Almighty, so they're jealous now of everything and they despise God's creation because they are cut off from it. So Since the fall of Adam and Eve, this world was quarantined just for mortal activity. Mortals are not normal because God doesn't create mortals. He creates immortals, divine, eternal beings that never die, never get sick, never get old, and they're very full of wisdom. And so everything had to get quarantined here so that souls could experience creation. And just like you said, Don, we have to make decisions. It's our choice. That's why we're here. We are given opportunities to make decisions and critical choices. However, unfortunately, we're not prepped about this at an early age so we can be smart about our decision making. We're kept intentionally in the dark, making it much tougher on us to prevail through all kinds of negative circumstances that constantly bombard us. That's all by design. And so during this is all temporary. This quarantining is all temporary. It's got a beginning and an end phase to it. And during all this, the devils themselves have only this opportunity to do whatever they can, because when this phase of creation's over and this world is no longer imperfect and quarantined, it's going to be restored to being perfect, a paradise, then the devils have no place to go at all to exercise their influence so that God's creation, as far as mankind goes, can be tested to see if they're worthy to fill the role of great beings that have great purpose. At each of us, are all have ahead of us a great, incredible purpose by our Father God. But first, we have to pass many tests in order to qualify. And so we're being inhibited with all that. So now God's a creator. He creates gardens, and we're in this garden. And so it's up to us to keep the garden going. So through virtuous living, we discover our relationship with our Father God, who made our spirit, our Mother God, who clothes our spirit with flesh. And that's why the original scientists called material substance matter. Material comes from matter. Matter is Latin for mother. So this mother principle is what clothes our spirit with a garment of flesh. We call it a body. So it's up to us to take care of this body. And so our master taught us the body is a temple of the spirit and the spirit is a temple of God. So we have to realize that the body is the key. That's why there's a heavy assault on our bodies, trying to destroy them, may keep them sick, keep them very infirmed, because they don't want us to experience what the body's really all about. Just think about when we were young, like teenager years, early teenager years up to your early 20s. Nothing could stop you. You're a ball of energy. You're a dynamo. You get knocked down like a rubber band. You spring right back up and you're ready to go again. And that's how we're supposed to be our entire life. And so they don't want that. And so we are in a major battle here in this temporary world of imperfection. Once we discover that our real role is to participate with our Father God's creation, assisting it in growing, not constantly taken from it, but assisting in growing, getting our hands on Tesla technologies, because he was sent by the good angels to give us the energy production sources that would be in harmony with creation, no pollution, virtually free and cheap electricity and heat. And so without taking anything from nature, without harming her in any way, and they're suppressing that, they won't let us have that. And so by utilizing all of these abilities that are at our disposal, but we don't have access to it all at the same time just yet. But as we bring it all together individually into our lives and we live in harmony with creation and help it grow, that is virtuous living. And Power comes to you through that process. You just discover gradual increases in power. It'll manifest because you start to get healthier, which means you have more energy, more power, more volition to do whatever you want. Your mind is more positive and at peace with everything because you're using your proper mind now that the Creator gave you, not the phony, false mind that's carnal that the devils have given us. That's where the old cartoons, the good angels in one ear speaking to you, the bad angels in the other ear speaking to you, that's the devil's mind and the Heavenly Father's mind that we have at our disposal, and it's our choice as to what thoughts we're going to entertain. And so it's through this virtuous living in this world that we become our real self, our real nature will be discovered. And then power will avail itself. The good angels will become more obvious with their activities in your life. And you can't even describe what happens from that point on because it's like you're born again. Hey, that's what the Lord said. You must be born again. Ah, so it doesn't mean, hey, I believe in Jesus. I'm born. I'm saved. No, no. It's a real process. And this is how it all comes about.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Garden of Eden. And I once studied that for quite some time. And I read some other writings, for example, from the Urantia book, which talked about, as you said, Adam and Eve were master gardeners. They were also biologists, it's described there.
There you go.
And I did a study of Eden, and I actually even studied the different names that were used. And the first name would have been Edenu, which comes from the Akkadian, or it would have been the oldest Semitic language from Assyria and Babylonia, or Babylon, if you want to say that. And then the Sumerians referred to the word Eden as meaning plain or desert. Now, that was kind of a revealing word to me because it implies that even though we know Eden was paradise, it was not just a garden, but it was totally unspoiled paradise.
Mm-hmm.
If they were gardeners, they would have had to plant a garden. And so the Sumerian word, which would be plain or desert, implies that it was barren until they came there and made it a garden. So their purpose for coming was symbolic of the purpose of life. In other words, we reap what we sow.
Yes, well, that's a law of life. And
yeah.
What you have is the fact that Adam and Eve's presence when they came, yes, they were on a mission. The rebellion already occurred with the fallen angels. This was well known. And so they came on a mission. We have to bear in mind that everything was paradisical. There was no death.
Mm-hmm.
No death. There was no predators. Lions ate grass. Hawks ate bird seed. And so a profound event caused transformations that brought about predators and all kinds of pestilence and vermins, like mosquitoes and things like that. And they didn't exist before when Adam and Eve first arrived. So I think what happened is that it was after the fall that, see, Adam and Eve were cut off from Eden after the fall. And the cherubims with the flaming swords would not allow them to enter again. And they were totally distraught.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's when the arid environment of just desert-type plains, that's when they came into existence. That's what I think.
Okay, Michael, we've got to take a break. We're at the conclusion of our first hour. We'll be right back, though. Don't go away. You're listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com.
HempUSA.org is now offering free shipping worldwide to better serve our customers. Our goal is to get these fine hemp products to you in the least amount of time. You can enjoy what a powder seen oil can do for you. HempUSA.org has a warning that the U.S. food supplies are dangerously low, and we urge you to protect your family with hemp storable foods today. Tomorrow may be too late. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. This incredible food source is loaded with enzymes so your body can digest the food you eat, and it creates an alkaline environment where cancer can't grow and parasites cannot live, and brings funguses, viruses, and bacteria levels down to a halt. Try our powder seeds and oil today. Call 908-691-2608 or visit us.org. If the body has the proper nutrition, it will heal itself. Ask yourself, why does our government not allow this crop to grow in the U.S.? This product is also great for pets and animals. Call 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org today.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Hey, everybody, this is your new friend, Julio, and I'm talking to you because I like to listen to BBSRadio.com. I think we're on board every day, and I go see my girlfriend. She got a computer. Come on now, sing it, girls.
Party and down, I'll million buys, thousands all around. Caribbean rhythm, Caribbean sound. Caribbean sunrise, thousands all around.
And the wind and the trees and the ocean breezes are coming to my soul. And the girls in the tight bikinis all fine, they make me lose control. The fire's like burning right through the night, and the party's so much fun. And when the party ends and the new day begins, everyone can make a gun. Caribbean rhythm, Caribbean sound. Caribbean sunrise, bounces all around. Caribbean rhythm, Caribbean sound. Caribbean sunrise, bounces all around. Caribbean rhythm, Caribbean sound. Caribbean sunrise, bounces all around. Caribbean rhythm, Caribbean sound. Caribbean sunrise, bounces all around. Hey, hey.
Welcome back to hour number two of Kevin Footprint on Eve for some and already Thanksgiving Day 2008. I indulged a little bit there. One of our listeners, Middle Yaya, likes the transition from hour one to hour two with a little bit of music. He says it helps with meditation or introspection, if you want to call it that. And so I took the liberty to play a little bit of music just to lighten the load a little bit and allow everybody to sort of soak up all this information that's streaming through our guest, Michael Anthony, this evening. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Pleasure, Don.
We have this issue now of virtuous living, and of course we find numerous examples in the Bible. There are books, and you know, there's the definition too, in going back into this discussion of Eden just for a moment here, the Septuagint, which would be the Greek interpretation of the original Hebrew version of the Bible, basically refers to Eden as a paradise.
Yes.
And whether you know, we have to question whether or not it was paradise at that time, or that it had the potential to be paradise. I think symbolically, this is just my spiritual intuition kicking in, that it was probably a likely creation, and they came here to lift the vibration of the earth.
Well, hold on. See, that's not quite it, Don.
Well, I'm not finished yet.
but the premise isn't accurate. You see, they didn't come here because here didn't exist then. The world we're in right now didn't exist then, Don.
Well, I'm saying here, meaning the earth, coming to the earth is how I'm referring to it. I don't mean in the state
earth
that
then is nothing like it is now. Nothing.
Well, I don't dispute that, but
all
you know,
of physical nature, all of physical nature, it wasn't dense like it is now. We literally fell from a higher place to a lower place. It's like living up in the mountaintops and then getting stuck down in the bottom of the valley. And that's really what happened. There was a literal fall. That is very accurate. The Bible starts off as God as a gardener. Everything's paradisical. There's no death, no aging, no nothing. And there's no religion because God is right there. Adam and Eve are talking to him every day. There's no nighttime, no nothing. It's hard to imagine because it's just got to be so blissful, and we can't get much bliss down here, so it's got to be tough to imagine that. But nonetheless, that's how it starts off. Then the fall.
What would be their purpose, if I can ask this
question?
Here you
go. I'm getting right to that right now.
What would be their purpose for coming to paradise if it was everything that it needed to be?
Okay,
there would be no purpose for them coming to be gardeners, to be biologists.
No. There was a fall. I mean, there was a rebellion. There was a rebellion. And huge chastisement, fallen angels that were literally sons of God are cut off
by the death. I don't dispute that at all.
Okay, so this is the purpose of Adam and Eve's existence. God created another form of angel to fill in the void of those fallen angels. Because, Don, we all have purpose. God doesn't create things to have no purpose. So every being has a function, a role to play. And so Adam and Eve were created to fill in that gap. So the fallen angels were very jealous of this and did everything they can to ruin Adam and Eve. And so everything at that time was still paradisical because there wasn't imperfection anywhere yet. There wasn't a fall. Everything was still perfect. And therefore, that means everything was heaven-like. Because all heavenly realms are literally perfect. No death, no disease, no poverty, nothing negative at all.
Okay, now I'm hearing what you're saying. Let me make a point here. The fall occurred before Adam and Eve arrived here on the earth. Would you agree with that?
No.
Who tempted Eve then?
There was a rebellion, but not a fall yet. Now,
the Bible says that they were the first man and woman, so who was rebelling?
Okay, Don, let me clarify that, because you're right. There was a fall. It was the angels. They fell from the rebellion. And after they were cut off, where there was no chance of redemption, then they lost their beauty, their beautiful bodies, and became grotesque. And so that is a fall, yes. However, yet, Don, you are right, because of their fall, and they caused grotesqueness and therefore inharmony and therefore imperfections, Adam and Eve were coming to repair. That's true.
Yes.
That's true. However, what they were repairing was not really like what we're here at now. No. We're more like in Noah's time, as the Master said. It'll be like unto Noah's time before the Son of Man returns. That's where we are now.
Yeah, I agree. I'm making just the symbolic statement that for them to come here to be gardeners, now they could come just to tend a garden, but they were more than that. They were master biologists. They were master gardeners.
They were immortals, Don.
And they were immortal, too.
That's everything.
That's a quality, but that's not necessarily a vocation. We are all immortal if we reach our true state.
Yes. So we are immortals in potential. They were immortals. And as immortals, Don, they were perfect, and therefore, whatever their functionality was, on their mission, they were going to excel at it.
Because they were angels. So I'm referring to what I think Eden may have looked like, and how it's related to us in a book that is replete with omissions. You know, the Apocrypha, the Book of Enoch, on and on. And even the teachings of the Lord himself show that this was being hidden from us. And I only made that statement about Joe Church because I feel I agree with that the choice that we have is to either finally recognize our true nature and to side with God.
Yeah, but Don, that, That's all true. But who is describing our true nature? That's where I don't hear anybody covering the details. The people need to know, what is the true nature then? What am I looking for? Well, here it is.
Yeah, that's the purpose.
Virtuous living. Living.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the master was all about. He came to show the way to get back to being an immortal. Because he said, know ye not, ye are gods. That's a fact. He said to us, know ye not, ye are gods. We are gods with a small g, as children of the Almighty, who is God. And so he was showing us how to get back to our immortal nature. That's why he called it being born again. It's a real process for the immortal nature to establish itself, for it to become us. We have to get out of the way. That's what the master meant when he said, you must lose yourself to find yourself. Find yourself. And so we need clear, concise instruction so that the people can run with something and apply it in their lives, and it's tangible. Because otherwise, nobody's getting it. And so this is what it's all about. Virtuous living. And the Bible itself makes clear, starts off in a garden, then the Son of God comes, and he says, I am the vine, ye are the branches. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. As you sow, so shall ye reap. In the end times, I will send my angels for the harvest and separate the wheat from the chaff. It's all gardening, okay? Then we get to the end of the Bible, Revelations. Everything's paradise again. The Lord returns, beautiful garden, no death, no disease. The animals are all grazers, no more predators. The sword is turned into the plowshare. It all goes back to where it was at the beginning. This temporary phase of mortal it will be over, finished. Never to be experienced again.
Yeah, that's definite. Now, the reason I brought all this up is because an aspect of how people live, and this is an observation, again, it's not a judgment, they're waiting for something else to happen. They're waiting for someone else to make things happen.
Mm-hmm.
They're waiting for someone to rescue them, someone to save them. They're waiting for a savior. And in that sense, the Savior has already come.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Therein lies the reason why so many people remain asleep. They go to church, they read the Bible, they talk to God, they pray, but what do they do when they go to church?
Do they have discussions like we're having? No. And
exactly.
So, therefore, they will never catch on.
Yeah, the truth can slap them upside the head like a sledgehammer.
The Lord could be standing right by their side, Don, and they never recognize it.
Yeah, but we would like to think, we would be correct in assuming that our listening audience is awake. Those that are still listening to the show right now are awake at this early morning hour. And
your audience is astute, Don, for the most part, I'm sure. It's the general populace out there that we're trying to reach.
Yeah, well, you know, we do that according to how many people are listening to this show, but this the writing is on the wall for the listening audience, because people can go out and spread this message if the message rings true. Of course, it all boils down to, again, that we're not asking anyone to believe us. This is a thing about knowing.
Just test it. Prove it's either true or false, right or wrong.
And that requires action. That requires an action on their part.
It requires, first of all, reflection on the lesson so they understand what they have to do, and then following through with the action. Yes, absolutely. And that all involves work. And you see, work, productivity, being productive, that's virtuous. Being lazy, that's a vice. The vices come from the devils. The virtues come from the good angels. So this isn't in any of the four gospels, but it's my favorite, one of my favorites from the master when he was teaching. And he said, it's not easy to gaze at the heavens when all men can only gaze at the ground. It's not easy to worship at the feet of angels when all men can only worship fame and riches. But most difficult of all is to think the thoughts of angels, speak the words of angels, and to do as angels do. See, now, if that was in the Gospels, maybe that would help people start to think more about what is expected of us.
And that's still true today, because you see chemtrails being sprayed in the sky, and people don't even know they're there. You know?
There you go. There you go. Staring at the ground instead of looking up.
Or they have their focus on just the material aspect of,
and
of it.
As well. Yes, sir. Right on.
Yeah. Now, and I'm agreeing with what you're saying here. I hope you understand I was trying to make that clarification.
Oh, yes. Sure, Doc. I know you. I understand.
There's some symbology there in that if we look at the meaning of these words, if we examine the meaning of these words, rather than just accept these blindly without thinking it through, without discerning what
right.
is there.
Right.
Because that's what the path of the truth is all about. When you learn one truth and you see time and again that it can be tested, as you said, and it proves itself as unchangeable, as eternal, then there are other aspects of the truth that one can learn. And so when one begins acting, and you refer to it as work or doing or even being is a way to describe it, then they can add on to that. What happens is as they remove these illusions, they also shed or cast off the fear that has gripped them into a state of denial and
that's
unconsciousness.
Right. The counterfeit system. Right, Don. The counterfeit system will be exposed when you get to that point of awareness. But don't overlook or underestimate the importance of work, because you see, if it was easy, everybody'd be doing it. It's a lot of work to wake yourself up. It's a lot of work to analyze everything and then test it all and test it properly, because you want to draw an accurate conclusion. Any good scientist knows the conclusion is only as good as his experiment.
Well, you and I talked about that on that first show that we did in this whole series. And the work, I refer to it as attention, putting the attention on it.
Absolutely, Don. It's all attention, right?
And
mentally,
it's
all attention.
Yeah, it brings about that awareness. Now, that awareness now becomes a tool to assist and to lighten the load of the attention, really, because as you're learning the truth, And you have a confidence. You have a...
You get lighter.
You have a knowing that causes you to be,
you know,
as opposed... Don,
that's right. You're getting lighter because the knowledge you're acquiring is more wisdom, and it has a high energy rate to it, which was what you were saying earlier in the show.
A higher frequency. Yeah.
That's right. And it's raising us as... An entity with a higher vibratory level, because we're possessing that consciousness. And that brings us closer to Eden, where Adam and Eve started from. You see, once we get our minds on par with our Creator's mind, no longer using the lower mind, getting caught up in its machinations and illusions and deceptions, then once we implement it correctly and we're using the Almighty's mind properly, qualifying energy, every thought, every word, spoken is positive, qualifying matter. We'll be creating the heavenly realms here as we were intended to do. That's really why we all volunteered to come here. Mm-hmm. But it's all lost through the birth process. And then the fallen angels and their minions, which mainly are the international globalist Rockefeller, Rothschild, bankster cabal, they have their system fully in place now so that they can keep all souls that are born here totally in the dark throughout their entire life. And, of course, the movie Matrix exposes that.
Mm-hmm. Now we come to a point here, I think, in this discussion where we can agree to move to the to how we treat our physical shell, you know, or you know, it's referred to as a temple,
right?
You know, sometimes you wonder if that's the best word for it, considering what goes on in the temples.
No. It is the best word for it. Absolutely.
Well, I'm sort of making a pun on organized religion.
Well, you see now, here, Don, in the Old Testament, the Lord appearing outside the tent, and then he's requiring a temple be built so he can dwell inside. Okay. Then the mm-hmm. Lord comes. The Lord, when he gives up his spirit on the cross, and the big earthquake, everything gets dark in midday, and everything's like nighttime, and a huge storm blows in, and it's a giant earthquake, busting up the ground, and it's the scripture says, rented the veil in twain, meaning that thin veil in the sacred temple that separated the inner sanctuary, the Holy of Holies, as it was called, where the Ark of the Covenant was stored, and only the high priest was allowed to enter that room with the Lamb's blood he poured on the seat of mercy. So when the Lord gave up his spirit on the cross, the veil was ripped in half, meaning now, with the whole purpose was the Almighty trying to reestablish himself with his creation, and he wanted to dwell in the body temples of every individual, but the people were so pathetic it never happened. So he has all his prophets trying to instruct them in the proper way of doing things so this process could come about, but they killed the prophets. He sends his son, figuring, well, they don't understand my servants, but they surely will understand my son. And they kill his son. But his son accomplished his task, and he brought about the process. He brought it here and got it established, whereby we can reconnect with the Almighty directly. No middleman. The Holy Spirit will dwell in our body temple. If we make it a temple. And that's definitely what it's all about, Don. Keeping the body like a temple so that the spirit can dwell within us because, for example, with me, Don, you know, I'm into a lot of things and I like to excel at all of those things because that's just how I am. And so a lot of people that get to know me, they even sometimes marvel, Mike, how do you do this and that and this, and you're so good at it all. And I always say, it's because I live with the Lord. See, with the Lord, I can do anything. But without the Lord, I can't do anything. I'm nothing. So when we keep the body like a temple and the Lord comes and dwells with us, and it's a literal rapport, and you know that, Don, because you live that way as well. And God willing, everybody listening will soon experience it too, so we can all appreciate the beauty of this. And so when that happens, then we are experiencing exactly what the whole Bible was about. The Almighty trying to dwell in the body temple. Constructing the physical temple was just the symbology of us. The real temple is this marvel. When people say there's no such thing as perfection, you can just laugh at them and say, I guess you're not living in your body then, because you didn't create your body. While we're talking this whole time, our bodies are pumping blood. The heart's pumping the blood. Air, oxygen's being extracted out of the air by the lungs. All the cells are doing metabolic functions. The digestive system's digesting. All these activities going on, but I'm not controlling that, regulating it, directing it. Who is?
Even the words we're speaking are having an effect on everyone's body, too.
Absolutely. That's why it's so critical to speak properly.
Yes, exactly. And that's where the truth comes in. Again, that's eating.
Part of the ritual of living.
Yeah. How we eat, what foods we eat, bears an impact, because all foods vibrate unless they're dead. And even in their dead state, they're vibrating, but at a very low frequency.
Well, it depends on what you're referring to now. Because animal flesh, when it's dead, it's vibrating at not really anything, Don. It'll be dirt faster than the apple that was picked off a tree.
Well, as long as it has some form that's visible or tangible, it's vibrating. It's just,
but it won't have that form for very long because it's dead energy at that point.
Well, yeah, that's not the point I'm making, but yes, that's understood. So what we choose to eat has everything to do with it. Now, I found something kind of interesting, and we feed our minds. I was trying to just see what CNN was describing about this so-called terrorist event in India. And then they took a break, and they went to a fast food commercial.
Mm-hmm.
The one that uses the Illuminati number 13 tipped over on its side.
Yeah.
And underneath the golden arches, it says, I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
Yeah.
Now, you have to ask yourself, what does that mean? What is the quality of the vibration offered?
There is quality. It lacks quality. It has none.
So,
how do you even call it food?
Yeah. So there. But I just found it so ironic that they're showing death, and then in the commercial they're reinforcing the death
in another way.
Yeah. You see.
That's right.
They're
masters of the technologies of death.
Mm-hmm.
The fallen angels are the masters of that.
Yeah, so many people ignorantly just fall into that trap. Now, they say, oh, well, you know, it tastes really good, or, you know, I can feed my whole family on $20. And,
right.
You know, and if that's the case, take a $20 bill and cut it up into pieces and start chewing.
Well, if they were smart, they take that $20 and grow a whole bunch of like sunflower sprouts, which I think are the best eating veggie salad around. And you want to see everybody stay healthy, even though you won't believe it until you do it.
Mm-hmm.
They're so incredibly healthy, and they build up muscle. It's great stuff. $20 would go a long way if he was wise with it.
Mm-hmm. But the point I'm making there is that we don't see the psychology. We take that into our vibration.
We're raised that way.
I was going to say, what is our vibration when the quality of the food is such that it can't support life? It may satisfy that hunger pang, but really it's another way or another means of adding to the toxicity of the body.
Oh, sure. And you can see it manifest to prove it's true. Your statement's true. You can see it manifest. Anybody, all you got to do is do this test. Don't shower. Eat that stuff every day. Do not shower for 3 weeks.
And please don't go out in public.
Right. That's what's going on to your body temple. It's converting your body temple into a disheveled shack. done, unfortunately. And in consultation or when I'm seminaring, I usually, people don't know what to think when I open up my beginning statement with, as soon as we're born, we're taught how to die.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time you get into it, an hour or two later, and then they ask a question, and I answer it with, because when we're born, we're taught how to die, they go, oh, yeah, got it.
And yeah, and you're even, spanked without having done anything wrong. You know, you're given corporal punishment from your first breath.
That's the greeting, okay, mm-hmm. of the world you're entering. That's their welcome.
Well,
yep, but we are here to restore it. That's why we are here. That's our job, to take care of the garden. And when we do it successfully in our own little way, in our own little world, then it's just incredible. It's incredible. I mean, I was at a family function the other day, and it, lo and behold, I got there a little late, and I was flattered because it seemed like when I got there, everybody was missing me. And I was even more surprised when, because family usually never understood anything I used to say. But then they would all of a sudden all start saying, everything you said, Mike, you know, about this and that and this and that 5 years ago. And I'm like, try 10, 15, 20, 25 years ago. It's all coming true. It's already happening exactly the way you said. And also, they would be saying how, like, they would, in the backyard where I am, the birds and everything, I got a pigeon that I caught because he couldn't fly, so I'm trying to fix him up. And I've had him for a few months. And my mom would say, yeah, I see him open up the cage. It's getting dark. And he'll open up the door to the bird cage, and he'll put it in front of him and tell him, hop in it. And it'll try to walk away from him, and he'll say, no, hop in it. And the bird will hop in it, and everybody's laughing. But I actually have this rapport with everything. All the animals, all the birds, and even the plant kingdom. Of course, I'm an herbalist. Even the plant kingdom. And this is how it's supposed to be for everybody. So when friends, you know, hang out with me a bit, and they see all this all every day, this is my normal life. Plus, I'm never sick. I'm doing all kinds of things. And always a ball of energy. And so, you know, Mike, wow, how do you doing? It's like, hey, I'm nothing special. Everybody's supposed to be this way. It's not a big deal. This is how you should be, too. All the animals, everything should not be afraid of you, too. And you should be able to grow anything easily. You should have nature totally in favor of you only because you're on her side, always defending her and helping her out all the time. And how do you do that? Well, during the winter time here, I do my best to feed the animals, the wildlife, and cost you a lot now. And I remember just at the checkouts, the cashier saying, I can't believe you're spending this just to feed the birds. And I said, you don't know how it comes back to you then, do you? Because if you did, you'd be doing it too. Even though it looks like I'm spending a lot, and I am. But I'm getting way more in return. Way more. This is what virtuous living is all about. This is what people are missing. If you live virtuously, you're in harmony with God's creation, then there's nothing to fear. Fear will be gone because you have God on your side.
Yeah, and an outgrowth of that for those people that have a problem getting along with others and communicating with others, when you learn to communicate with yourself and with God and with nature, it's second nature, really, and no pun intended, to communicate with others and recognize the oneness that we share.
Of everything, that's right. You see, if all men were to realize this, Don, for example, when we were created whole, male, female. But we're in a world of duality, hot, cold, right, wrong, up, down, and truth, lie. And so love, hate, hate. See, everything's duality. So we had to be split to get here. Now, at a certain age, the opposite halves are drawn to each other because they're trying to balance themselves back out because we're split in half. So hence, boys looking for girl, girls looking for boy. Now, once you realize that when we were made whole, we had a real opposite half. That is our opposite half. I have an opposite feminine counterpart somewhere. And all other feminine counterparts or feminine beings are sisters, because my real opposite half, my true feminine opposite counterpart, is what is known as a twin flame. And therefore, any messing around with any other kind of woman is really your sister. And that's why it was always frowned upon with fornication and all that in the Bible. So it's not because God wants to tempt us and torture us. It's because they're our sisters. We're all one big family, like you were saying.
Well, my other half is a talk show listener. So, just to look at it from a different perspective. Actually, I am that, too.
Well, that's how it is, though. It's the twin flame. That's our real opposite half. That's why we're always looking for that person, that other opposite half, that's opposite sex, that's going to make us happy. And when it falls apart after time, you think you found her, and then it falls apart over time, that's a soulmate. It's all temporary. The twin flame is permanent. But it's through virtuous living that we're going to find the twin flame. The Lord taught all of this because he wants us whole and happy so we can be good children of good sons of God. Because that's what we are. So we are. And daughters of God. Daughters of God.
Now, at the beginning of the first hour, I brought up the issue of fear. In fact, we brought it up a couple of times. And really, that is a total manifestation of an illusion that actually takes over certain aspects of the physical body. It enters the temple as if it was a fog or a smoke. Yeah, it is, of course. Ultimately, it's destructive. And and really, there's a process of destruction going on from the beginning. It's not something that happens at the end. It's a continuing process.
It's corroding. Yeah, and it's corroding all three parts of our nature, because we, as a creation of God, are essentially contain three parts. That is the spirit, the body, and the mind. So yes, like the negative energy, it's going to corrode the mind, the spirit, and the body. It's going to work on all three parts of our being, and ultimately, destroy us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they want. And it's also a vibration that they feed on. It's literally food to the fallen angels.
Yeah.
They have to have it in order to be happy. They are so miserable that in order for them to be happy, we have to be miserable. If we're happy, they're miserable.
Mm-hmm.
That's how pathetic they are.
And also, now, as we rediscover our true nature, our true self, or selves, we are also protected from what they do to us. You know, with this wisdom that we're talking about, with this consciousness, with better health, when you can only put so much of something into a container. And if you imagine that your physical body is a container and it's filled with light, you have no room for darkness in it. Yeah. So
it
pretty much explains itself, and yet if we don't take the step, if we just think, oh, it would be wonderful if I could be conscious, but I really don't have the time to go through that, or I wouldn't know how to go about that. You know, we're actually describing how to go about that, and we're describing what it feels like to be going through that, and what to expect. But as it happens, this is the beauty of this, is that those that are living in fear, those that are living in denial, only need to light that first spark. And
right.
From that moment, everything is the process. It's the process. It's not about how you get. Well, even the first step is every bit as important as the second and the third.
That's right. Yeah. It's as important as the last step.
Yes. And it's all really occurring at the same time. The difference between that and what you had been experiencing is that this will reveal it to yourself as you become conscious of it. It was always there.
It's within us. The kingdom, it's within us. It's called the kingdom of heaven. That's what the Lord referred to. The kingdom of heaven is within you. And it's like a mustard seed. And so we have to cultivate it. All gardening, you see. It's always gardening. We have to cultivate this little seed of power in us. It's divine. And as we cultivate it by nourishing it, giving it what it needs to grow. Well, that's simple. Live virtuously, and it will grow, and it will expand. And as it does, then we become what we are from the beginning. And the false, phony self is gone. And power abides with us. And once that happens, that's right, fear doesn't really exist. It can't, because you're dwelling with the Lord Himself, and it's only peaceful there. No matter what happens, you know where you'll always be. Always in a good place, because you're with the Lord. Once our divine nature is established, then everything changes. And so it's a process. You have to take the first step to get to the last step, and it's a long process, a very long process, but it's there for all of us because it's meant to be. We just have to pursue it, want it, and like the Lord said, it's so precious that the rich merchant gave away all that he had just to possess that one great pearl. And so it has to have that value to you, and then it will come to you as you pursue it, because it's meant to be. This is how it's all designed to be.
Yes. Now, this is going to seem like I'm going off on a tangent, but I want to come back with this. There was something I was reading today. A friend sent me a book to read, and I'm reading about the interest that the Nazis, and this really seems like I'm going off on a tangent, had in the Tibetan monks and what knowledge they had, what they were able to share with them. And there was a particular chapter on the life of Otto Skorzeny, which I found very interesting. And I read it and agreed with everything I read. It was basically a regurgitation of other people's work. But
did he go to Tibet?
No, he didn't. But
okay.
He was considered the consummate warrior.
He was something. He really
yes.
was.
You could present him with a problem, and he could figure it out. In other words, He could look at the situation as it appeared, and he looked at it only that way, not putting any limitations on how he would carry about his mission. They described.
Can I give you an example that everybody will love to hear as far as understanding what Otto Skorzeny was all about? When the Italians took Mussolini towards the end of the war, and they had enough. And
that's
they
what
lost.
I was going to refer to.
Oh, okay, good. That was a major, major move, boy. I mean, holy smokes!
Well, the thing about that rescue was the fact that the hotel where Mussolini was being kept was near a cliff, and the only access to this whole area was via that cliff.
Don, Don, it, when you see a photo of it, it's such a high mountain peak that so narrow that the very top of this mountain was the building that he was in. Nothing else could. There was no room for anything else. You couldn't even stand anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's how narrow the top of this mountaintop was.
But he plotted out the whole thing and actually walked into the hotel by himself.
He hang glided.
Well, now I'm talking about after the hang gliding. He walked into the hotel, and it caught everybody off guard, and that gave his men the opportunity then, a smaller group of people, to take on a larger contingent of Italian soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And now I mention this because there was definitely a lot of creativity involved in how he worked. Yet the story ends with him dying in 1975 of cancer in Madrid. So the author fell for the intelligence gaffe that the whole world fell for.
Right.
Until Eric Orion and I came out with our research on actually what Scorzani's role was. I found myself even going back. Now, I'm bringing this up because this is discernment.
Nazis and Tibetans, Don. You were going to...
Well, I'm describing the book that it was in, basically. I wasn't intending to go into the aspect of the Tibetans right now. But just to show how people, someone reading this now, and with limited information, is going to accept this author's conclusion, like so many others did, that Scorzani died in Madrid in 1975. Yet I can lead anyone to the place to read about his death in 1999 on December 31st. And pictures to back it up. So there's plenty of proof here, you see. The things that we're talking about work the same way. There's plenty of proof that these things are real.
Sure, you just have to look for it. That's true will prove itself to be true, Don.
Yeah, you can attempt to obfuscate the truth, but the point I'm making is ultimately the truth will come out, even if it's hard to believe, and it will come out in the strangest ways. I never in my life would have dreamt that I would be someone revealing this in the way I did and in conjunction with the other things revealed. I've got much, much more follow-up research on that. In fact, I'm writing a book on all of this stuff right now. And speaking of, that research. But I came to a realization that the only way that people are going to really latch on to that information is if it's in a book form. It's just how people accept things.
I agree. It's a tool that you need to have reference to all the time. So that's the beauty of a book. It's easier to read a book than stare at a computer screen.
But people could read a newspaper, you see, but they have to get off their duff and subscribe to it, you see.
Yeah, but a book is usually more intimate, you know?
Oh, I know. I mean, I don't discount that. I can put all the information I choose to put in the book.
Right.
And I don't have to limit it because of space.
You can, you can personalize the book.
Yeah. But the general point I'm making is that consciousness is the same way. We can allow others to tell us what our consciousness is and accept that and not even question whether or not it's real. Would you not prefer and you do have a choice, by the way, even though you're told you don't, we all have a choice to be whoever we choose to be.
Well, Don, what you said is real. It's really right on the money because, you see, what happens when you first get exposed to the truth, it shatters your concepts because we're raised and taught to be totally ignorant of reality. So everything they told us is a lie. And so when you come across the truth, you know, it's shattering concepts. So a lot of times, often, people can't handle that and say, oh, my God, that can't be true. It can't be true because it's blowing their mind, quote unquote. It's shattering their concepts. And so we learn that as a true individual, you got to be a spiritual warrior. The truth is the prize. And you have to follow it wherever it leads, no matter where it leads you. You have to follow it because it's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And
you
only
know,
the truth will keep us free.
Being my birthday, you know, I had to renew my registration for my vehicle and my driver's license and all that. It was going to expire on a holiday, so I had to do it before the holiday. And the first question I was asked, are you a U.S. citizen?
Uh-huh.
Born in the United States. And I thought, you're asking me this question for what purpose? And I said, are you asking me, was I born here in America? And the girl said, yeah. And I said, do you have a place where you can mark that answer down?
Right.
And she said, well, the question I'm asking is, are you a U.S. citizen?
Right.
And
right.
I said, I take issue with the nature of the question.
Attaboy, Don.
Because you're asking me, am I a subject of a corporation?
Of a federal government.
Yes, you see. And it really raised a lot of issues. This clerk took it that I was being difficult. And I said, no, I'm not being given the questions I would like to be asked.
I love it, Don. Don, when I got called in for jury duty a while back, and I had to fill out the questionnaire, same situation, and I had to answer, am I a U.S. citizen? So I called up the judicial people of the county that were sending out the juror notifications, and boy, did I confuse them.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? They didn't understand any of that, but I educated them. I ended up talking with the county commissioner. And I said, I even emailed them information to back up that I'm not a U.S. citizen. I'm, if anything, a citizen of New York State.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. Yep, that's right, Don. The truth is stranger than fiction. And that's because they have brainwashed us into not knowing anything that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another prime example. People thinking they're U.S. citizens when they fill out a form.
Mm-hmm. Well, I asked her the question, or I asked her to define what she meant by a U.S. citizen. And she said, well, I'm just asking the question as it's written down. And I said, well, I can't answer it the way it's written down.
Right.
Because that's not my experience. You see? Now,
what is a U.S. citizen?
Yeah, exactly.
What? Right.
I'm bringing that up because this is how discernment and this is how consciousness affects your everyday activities. You begin to question what you take for granted.
You begin to see through everything.
You begin to see the truth. And when you see the truth, you cannot turn away from it. It's not a matter of convenience to turn away from it any longer.
It's not smart to turn away from it because you inhibit your own growth. And one thing's for sure, Don, and we never got into this, didn't get a chance to discuss the falling nature of things and the mechanicalness. It's a mechanical creation. And so because of that, that's the reasoning for why everything is the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so we actually have to break away from a mechanical construct. And it's a lot of work, a lot of effort. That's the challenge that we all face when we're getting motivated.
See, these types of questions are just plays on words, and manipulation of the language to make it appear to mean one thing when it actually means something else, and no one wants to tell you what it means. No one will admit what it means. Of course, we can certainly figure that out.
No clear definition.
It's like that slogan that I mentioned earlier with the fast food restaurant. I'm loving it. What is it?
Right.
I'm loving it. Yeah. And it's put in a nice straight font that when you turn it 90 degrees to the right, it looks like the number 13.
Yeah, but you know, there's all relativity and scales to everything as to what types of truth are more important than others. And when it comes to that questionnaire, and are you a U.S. citizen, it's vital that all Americans understand that what they're implying is if you sign that, you're waiving your sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually allowing yourself to be considered a subject.
Mm-hmm.
And under the Constitutional Republic, we are the sovereigns. Those representatives are our subjects. And they're reversing roles on us, and the people don't even know it, and don't even have a clue. And so, well, what do you mean he's a citizen of New York State? Well, we are United States, a conglomerate, a union of different countries united with a common cause of a constitutional republic, and every state or country has to uphold that constitution in their own land, and otherwise they have all their own laws. So if you make a crime, cause a crime in one state, and you flee to another state, that new state can't try you. You have to go back to the state where you committed the crime because it's its own country. So the state you were born in is really your allegiance.
Mm-hmm.
We all have our own state flags. And when the Founding Fathers fought, even in the Civil War, it was Virginians against Pennsylvanians and New Yorkers against Carolinians. And that's how it was. And they don't want us to know that.
Well, you know, these methods are used to usurp our sovereignty and ultimately our freedom. Now, that raises just a rhetorical question. How is it that a piece of paper can undo everything else when they haven't actually enacted that into law? Mm-hmm. In other words, that piece of paper that whether I declare myself a U.S. citizen or not doesn't change who I am. And we have this thing of, are you a person? They want to make you a part of the corporation. In other words,
an artificial entity.
Yes, and so it's another aspect. Yeah, that's a very good term too. It's another aspect because if you're eating toxins, are you an artificial entity or are you a wholesome, healthy individual?
Mm-hmm.
Being whole is being holy. Being holy is being sacred, and it's quite a bit different from being a toxic dump on legs.
Quite a bit.
Or in a wheelchair.
It's sad to see it, but and that's what happens, Don, when we don't have good education. If we had good education, it would be totally different. And that's why these devil-worshipping controllers, these globalists, that are so evil that they're only happy when we're miserable. This is how pathetic they are. They have to control all our education so everything is the way it is. They're preventing us from being such enlightened, civilized people that a true golden age, you know, we'd be in the middle of a golden age right now if Tesla and other greats were able to launch their technologies and other great minds in other fields of science for health and all that were also able to prosper. we'd be in a golden age right now. We would be back in Eden already right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, just this popped into my mind in light of what we're talking about here. We've had this bailout, and regardless of who they want to save, those of us that know what's going on are perceiving it as just written permission to steal more from us. Now, I had called the failure of one of the banks, and that took place. Lehman Brothers was just bailed out, and now they're talking about bailing out Citibank. Now listen to this logic. And I'm trying to remember who for some reason, for a moment, it slipped my memory, but the wealthiest bank has a value of assets around $2.15 trillion. Citibank's assets are $2.05 trillion. They're the second wealthiest bank. Why do they need to be bailed out?
I'm still thinking the logic.
And if the second wealthiest bank needs to be bailed out, then why aren't they bailing out all the other banks underneath them? Because they would have to be out of money too.
Yes, Don. Obviously, none of it makes sense.
You see, so when you begin to discern these things,
that's
and
right.
You question these things, instead of fearing what's going to happen to the money or what's going to happen to my money, put it into a tangible asset while you can,
mm-hmm.
whether that's real estate or gold or silver or something that you can create out of what wealth that you do have, because their intention is to crash the dollar. Their intention is to crash the stock market. And we should also be looking at that, rather than through the eyes of fear, we should be looking at that as a blessing in disguise, because it moves us closer to another reality. It doesn't have to be their reality.
That's
we
right,
keep
yeah.
we keep accepting everything they throw in front of us.
That's right.
Whether it's crap in the law or crap on the table.
There's no choice being made in these instances. Isn't that interesting, huh?
Yeah, we're not making those choices, are we?
No choice is being made at all. No choice is even offered. No options are even offered. Interesting, huh?
And so we blindly accept that that's the way it is and that there's no other alternative.
Well, we don't. They do.
Well, I'm saying we in terms of...
I'm just kidding.
You know, the masses.
Of course. The sheeple.
Yeah. And that's why we're talking about all this. Even though this is quite a bit different from just talking about your body and what you eat, it's all the same thing. You're taking it in one way or another.
Discussing man's world in creation. And so, yes, we have to be living in God's creation in harmony and with full awareness. And simultaneously, we have to be just as much aware while we're living in man's world, because man's world is where all the problems are.
Well, yeah, that's where the whole idea of virtuous living comes in.
Yes. But even if we weren't, even if we weren't in this man's world, what I mean by man's world is this world run by these fallen angels and their mortal minions.
Mm-hmm.
Virtuous living is still, essential. But it's man's world where all the problems come from. It's not God's creation that's coming after us. It's man himself that has all these problems. And so we have to be very astute about this world of man that we're raised in, because it's not legitimate. It's counterfeit. It's controlled by these fallen angels and their minions, and they're evil to the core, and they're only happy when we're miserable. If we are happy, they are literally miserable. And they won't allow that. They won't tolerate that. They got to see us miserable so they can be happy. This is what we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this mantra, if you want to call it that, that we are what we eat, and we are responsible, even though we may do it subconsciously or unconsciously, we create what we put our attention on. And so if we're putting our attention on the fear factor, we create the circumstances that keep that fear going and keep
dwelling on it. Mm-hmm.
Yes, but it works for them too. It works
exactly.
Both ways.
That's right. That's right.
They cannot escape that. They pretend like they can, but that's all they're doing is pretending. And in the sense, when we're in denial, we're pretending too.
Sure.
So this is if the listening audience has picked up anything from this discussion tonight, I hope it would be that consciousness is a multidimensional concept. It doesn't happen on one level. It happens on the physical level and the level of mind and
it's
really
not limited. It's not limited by space or time. And that can only be appreciated as you acquire more of it and utilize it to see how amazing that statement is, how true it is.
Yeah. Now, I hear a lot of people, we've got to close the show out here, but I want to mention this. We usually do when we have enough time. A lot of people are experiencing tremendous benefits from Michael Anthony's private stock. And I've seen people that have been run down with very low energy, getting constant sore throats or sinus infections or just a variety of problems. I think that one of the biggest complaints people have is how tired they are and how they're not getting enough sleep. And I sleep very little, and everybody's amazed at how little I sleep. But it becomes a mindset in a way. When your body doesn't require the sleep, your mind is not seeking that extra rest. This thing that they say, well, everybody needs 8 hours of sleep. It's as though you're accepting from childhood, you're accepting the fact that you were going to be asleep for one third of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And those that are in denial are sleeping 24 hours a day.
Well, they don't elaborate enough so you understand the purpose of sleep, and it's to regain energy. So if you already have a lot of energy, you don't need to regain too much. Therefore, you're not going to sleep too much. And so it's, you know, all these supposed authorities out there and that educate everyone, they're frauds. They're cons.
Well, yeah.
They don't
and
know their heads from a hole in the ground.
There are plenty of people that sleep 8 hours a day and still have to take sleeping pills to fall asleep. Or they are waking up after 8 hours of sleep and they're not rested at all. Mm-hmm. And it has a lot to do with things that are going on in the mind and in the body.
Sure.
Outside of the body doing its normal thing, because if you ate holistically, if you ate natural foods, fruits and vegetables and nuts and certain grains and prepared properly, you wouldn't have the health problems that you have when you're eating junk food, when you're going out to fast food restaurants or eating unclean food. Do you know how the food is prepared?
If you treat the body like a temple, you won't have to deal with these problems.
So, you know, my answer to these people that ask me, how do you get by with so little sleep? First of all, it's a choice. It's a choice that I make. And no one can really force me to sleep when the desire's not there, you know, let alone the need. I can only describe it as a mindset. Now, that doesn't make me a night owl or anything like that, unless I'm up at night. But what does that mean? So I'm up at night. That's actually a good time to pray. It's a good time to meditate when the noise out there and the electromagnetic.
To be creative, working in a studio as well.
Absolutely. Some of my best music's been written while everybody else was asleep.
That's it.
So, going back to your the various products that you carry, I hear still more reports from everybody, even from you. I'm hearing things how people are describing what goes on. So,
I'm a fortunate guy that my type of vocation is just so rewarding because I get calls every day. Michael can't get over how much better I'm doing. Just about every single time. And I did have a guy today who was doing good with Rapid Heal, but then he said his shoulders just got real worse, but he ended up pushing himself quite a bit. And also, the way he was sleeping on it, he was just messing it up with the posture. And but I told him, just take some big doses for 2-3 days. You'll see it all clear up, and just be careful, until it's 100%. Don't aggravate it. But Don, it's just a beautiful thing. I mean, always just positive feedback, and it's very just rewarding to be able to help people like this and to know that they're getting well. And Don, every single client comes back for more. They stay with the products. And so, you know, that tells you something right there. The most of them always keep just stocking up on the Dragon Juice or the Rapid Heal, the Infection Killer, and the System Toner for the mainstay utility stuff. And I'm very fortunate because I get a kick out of it, seeing people get well using my products. And I thank the good Lord. It's not about me. If it wasn't for the good Lord, I wouldn't be able to help anybody. But because of him, this is what he wants me to do. And so he's given me the ability to design the ultimate herbal formulas that just perform in incredible fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if people were living more naturally in every aspect of their life, they would see these things sort of fall by the wayside, much like the snake that sheds its skin. It doesn't worry about what it's left behind. It goes on, carries on in its new form. And not that that's the best example in the world, but it certainly is visual.
Sure. But Don, let me say this, because this is really what makes me feel the best about this type of work that I'm doing. When people say, Michael, your products are worth way more than what you're selling them for, that's when I say, great. That's great, because I know now that I'm coming through for my master, because it's supposed to be cheap to get well and healthy. It's not supposed to be expensive, cost you a fortune. I wish I could be cheaper, but I can't. But one thing's for sure, when you see what my products do, I save the Rapid Heal alone saves people from operations all the time. And there's a girl up in Michigan with a cut ligament, totally separated. Doctors want her to operate, but with the Rapid Heal, just in 2 days, she told me she couldn't get over how good her hand felt. And so when you see what they deliver on, you know I'm giving it away. And that's fine, because it's supposed to be cheap to get well and healthy. And if I'm going to make money doing this, it's only going to be through doing big volume, because that's the only way I can. My prices are just too cheap otherwise.
Well, see,
that's
now,
I like
that. They, we're not, we don't have the images, and we don't have the music playing and the voiceover, mm-hmm. background. and the person with the red hair, you know, to get you excited about everybody in commercials has red hair.
Okay.
As much as they can, you know, insert that person. Just pay attention, you'll see. There's a reason why, because the color red excites
It's exciting,
people,
yes. Right.
Subconsciously. And if you've never had a speeding ticket, go out and buy a red sports car. And you'll get one even when you're not speeding.
That's true.
It attracts attention. So they use true. People with red hair for the commercials. But the point I was making is that as often as you get relief from a headache using a particular drug, the side effects far outweigh the benefits of that particular drug, which is just a toxin. It's not addressing the problem. It's masking symptoms. It's masking the symptoms. And propaganda and mind control works the same way. It's to mask the symptoms. It's to mask what's going on. It's to prevent us from getting at the truth or arriving at the truth. And we can change that. And by being creative, by aligning yourself with the creation, with God's creation, you will automatically become a creative individual, which you already are. You just don't know it in most cases.
Yes, but well, you know, Dan, if I could follow up with what you were saying just a minute ago, because what's also funny and about my approach with the health business, Michael Anthony's private stock. That's what it is. It's private stock. I'm not doing this as a business. It's funny when a lot of times when people contact me, Mike, what's your website so I can check it out? Well, I don't have one. Mm-hmm. And it seems, you know, why don't you have one? I mean, well, I'm not trying to do this as a business. As you know, Don, I'm trying to finish up my first album and have you get involved with that. I'm also trying to finish my first book, which is Secrets in the Fountain of Youth on health. And but my formulas and my products, I'm not, like you said, Don, no big sales, no, you know, flashy commercials, nothing. It's just the products selling themselves because they're just that good. And I'm not trying otherwise. I'm not promoting myself or anything. I'm not trying to make it about me or anything. It's just about getting these products to help people get well as fast as possible so they can get their lives going and be happy. And then, God willing, we'll get our country nice and healthy again.
Yeah.
And then hopefully the rest of the world after that.
Well, we're out of time, Michael. I want to thank you for... the effort and the information that you brought to us tonight on Thanksgiving.
Always a pleasure, Don. A lot of fun.
Don't eat too much turkey if you eat turkey.
You are what you eat, you know. And fortunately, I'm a strict vegetarian, so.
Well, don't be a chicken either, then.
No, I don't. Strict vegetarian. It's a Thanksgiving day for me, but it's not about eating. For me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it's time for us to say goodnight to the listening audience, and I would like to extend a thank you and a warm, happy Thanksgiving to Don Newsom and Seth Hendrick on the sound, as well as to the listening audience. Hope to see you all here tomorrow night. We will be broadcasting live. We've got another great show. Michael Herzog will be visiting us again. And we're going to have a little birthday party, so you're all invited. In the meantime, I wish everyone peace, love, and light, and have a good night.